You know, when Reverend Mike and I started this series on breaking the Ten Commandments, actually breaking down the Ten Commandments, we had no idea how popular the Ten Commandments would be. Not only the Ten Commandments, but Moses. They appeared on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert the other night. And just like us, Mike, Stephen Colbert was giving an update on the old Ten Commandments. And so the show opened with Moses, Stephen Colbert, explaining the latest rendition of the Ten Commandments. I don't know, did any of you see it? Okay. Well, oh, I love Stephen Colbert. Anyway, I love satire. It started with an interview of televangelist Pat Robertson. And they were asking him about the murdered journalist, Khashoggi. And they were asking his opinions on that. And basically, Pat Robertson was saying, compared to a $100 billion trade deal, and I quote his words, he said, what's one life? So, of course, Colbert comes down, like Moses and Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments with the tablets, and is pointing out and saying, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, he's going through the different ones. And when he gets to the thou shalt not kill commandment, there's an asterisk by it, engraved in the tablets. And he said, we need to understand the thou shalt not kill commandment only applies when there's not a lot of money involved. And we laugh about that, I mean, because it's so... Religions have been playing fast and loose with these spiritual laws for years, manipulating them and beating us over the head with them and then using them however they want to use them. I mean, there's a good reason why religion and politics should be separate. So in this series, Reverend Mike and I aren't necessarily putting any asterisks by the different commandments, but we are going deeper, you know, and we're going into deeper consciousness raising and metaphysical interpretations of these Ten Commandments. So as we're continuing this series, Breaking the Ten Commandments, we pretty much know, I mean, the simplified version, and we got the simplified version because it was easy to memorize when we were in grade school. You know, don't take the name of the Lord in vain, keep holy the Sabbath, honor your father and mother, don't kill. But we know the Bible and these commandments and the law in the Bible is really a spiritual roadmap for us that will hopefully take us from a grade school consciousness through high school, through adolescence, through adulthood, so that they will be able to guide us as we progress spiritually. Our understanding of these commandments will increase spiritually. So we need to examine them deeply because they hold keys for us to really expand our spiritual consciousness. And the problem with the commandments, as we're digging into them, there's so much, they're so meaty, it's hard to contain and put this into a small enough talk on Sunday morning. But we try. Anyway, I need to digress a little bit. I have to ask, it's been a busy week. Have you all gotten your Mega Million and Powerball tickets? Come on, you can, you know, let's see a show of hands. Even if you never play, I know I never play except when it gets over about 300 million. I mean, it's just, I don't like to bother with just small numbers. So I went out and bought some tickets. I haven't checked the numbers yet. I could be a billionaire and not know it. At any rate, I'll let you know if I am. So there's all these people, they're showing all these long lines of people buying these tickets. And a while back, must have been a couple of years now, I was listening to NPR, and they went back and they were looking at the lottery winners back when, you know, the lottery wasn't $300 million. And they did a story on this. They did some really interesting research, and they were following up on a huge percentage of these lottery winners, and they wanted to know how they were doing, because, I mean, $1 million. That's pretty exciting. And what they found out was that a huge percentage not only went through the money, the $1 million, they were actually in the hole. They were bankrupt. How can that be? I mean, you're a millionaire. You're getting this big chunk of money every month. And what they found out was that people started buying things, which, you know, I've got money, but they were living beyond their means. They made bad investments. They quit their jobs and they decided to go into business for themselves. And so they started their own businesses. And what I found particularly interesting was the businesses they started. And they found that the two most prominent businesses that people started when they went into business for themselves and they won the $1 million were taverns and bowling alleys. And in most of these cases, I mean, there's nothing wrong with owning a tavern or a bowling alley, but most of these cases where people went into business for themselves, they'd never owned a business. They've gone to work and they've worked for a boss and they've picked up their paycheck. They didn't have to worry about budgets and scheduling and employees and all of the stuff that a business does. And so often they hired family members. They got bad advice, or they didn't know where to go for good advice. Anyway, there were lots of reasons why the people lost the money, or worse yet, you know, were bankrupt. And what it really boiled down to when you thought about it is these were people who didn't know much about money. They didn't know how it works. They didn't understand investments and taxes, because that's a whole other consciousness. The bottom line, they didn't have the consciousness to handle this new abundance. And that idea of consciousness brings me to our commandments, the two we're working on today. One is, you shall not steal. And you're going, well, what the heck does you shall not steal commandment have to do with consciousness? Everything. All these commandments have to do with consciousness. Obviously, do not steal basically has to do with rights of ownership. So on a very basic level, you shouldn't take what is not yours that belongs to somebody else. Okay, got that. So if I take something and I get caught, there's a punishment according to this commandment. So if I don't steal because I'm afraid of getting punished, am I obeying this commandment? I'm obeying the letter of the law, thou shalt not steal. But what if I don't get caught? What if I steal and don't get caught? Is that okay? Am I still a thief? What if I just plan to steal something and then I don't follow through? Am I still breaking that commandment or keeping that commandment? We've talked about in previous weeks, these commandments are really about spiritual growth. They're meant to take us from a very simplistic understanding of the law, the very literal understanding of the law, to an expanded spiritual consciousness of what that law really means to us and our relationships and our society. Thou shalt not steal, in a deeper sense, means you shall not hold on to something or have something that does not belong to you and that has not come to you by right of consciousness. Okay, so in Unity Truth Teachings, we teach you live in an abundant universe, and we're surrounded by divine substance. And so our job is to be aware of that all surrounding divine substance, to then mold it and manifest it into our outer world. That's what we teach, actually. So it's a little like a magnet. A magnet attracts and holds steel filings, right? And if you pick up that magnet and shake it, those filings hang on to that magnet. If we have an unmagnetized piece of steel and we pour metal filings on it and go to pick it up, all those metal filings fall off. It's a good image for realizing that if we have the magnetic consciousness, if we have that understanding, we will draw those steel filings and hold onto them because we have that magnetism, we have that consciousness. If we don't, you can be standing in a field of abundance. You can be holding that $1 million lottery ticket, and it's not going to stick. That abundance is just not going to stick because we don't have the consciousness. You can't keep anything or have anything you don't have the consciousness for. Whether it's money consciousness, and that's an easy one to look at because we realize wealthy people think about money differently than people who aren't wealthy, because there is a consciousness there. There is an awareness there. What about prayer consciousness? We have to do our homework to build that consciousness. Spiritually, that's building a God consciousness. However you want to describe that, whatever God means to you, it's an understanding of what and how that power works for us and through us. So we do. How do we do that? Well, classes. Yeah, coming here on Sunday, maybe getting a provocative thought that kind of resonates with us. Doing our prayer work so that we can really tap into that divine consciousness and we really understand how it works, being open to it. We need to get to a place where we understand we're in a divine flow of abundance. And it's then ours to mold and manifest out into the world. It's not about getting, although that's what our society tells us. It really is about getting and then passing it on and moving it out. It's really about giving. So it's perfectly understandable why those lottery winners did not hold on to that money. They didn't have the background. They hadn't done the homework. They hadn't gotten the right advice. They didn't know where to go for that. They didn't have the consciousness. Because there were people who did win the lottery, and they did do well, but the percentage was so small. Always consciousness. The other commandment we're looking at is, thou shalt not commit adultery. What can I say? I've always wondered, yeah, I know. I'm not going to go off into sex and sin because that's not, I know there's somebody going, no, talk about. I could, but I'm not. I'll leave that for next week for Reverend Mike. I've always wondered about this commandment. Now, I know you have many things to think about, but because I'm a minister, I think about stuff like this. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Why do we have a standalone commandment for adultery? And then there's also a commandment about not coveting your neighbor's wife. Isn't that also adultery? I mean, have I missed something here? Aren't they the same thing? It seems like this commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, is a little redundant, at least to me. But if we explore it more deeply and we really look at what it's saying, maybe not. If we go back to Hebrew roots on this word of adultery, not only the root of the word in the Hebrew language, but also the history and the symbology of this concept of adultery with the Hebrew people, I think the word would better be defined as adulterate, you know, to pollute, to add to dilute, to contaminate. It really should say, thou shalt not adulterate. Well, then how does that change that particular commandment? Because adultery is really about unfaithfulness. And that image, if you read any of the Bible, that image of unfaithfulness runs through Scripture. Why this image of adultery? Well, there's this incredible story, and there was a prophet called Hosea. And this was not a job you wanted. You know, and God said, you know, you will speak for me and you will go to my people and tell them why they're doing things wrong. People always want to know that. They always want someone to tell them why they're doing things wrong. And so in this particular story about Hosea, he's God's latest prophet. And God tells Hosea to marry a promiscuous woman. I'm just telling you what's in the good book. And as awful as that whole concept is for Hosea, she's very unfaithful. And then God tells Hosea, well, you got to take her back. Now you can imagine, not only are you now God's prophet, not only did he tell you to marry an unfaithful woman who's committing adultery with everybody and anybody, but now God tells Hosea, take her back. Because he said this is an object lesson for the Hebrew people, for the Israelis, showing Israel they have sinned against God by following other gods. But God will always take them back. God always remains faithful to them, even though they're not remaining faithful to God. Even though his people, God's chosen people, have committed adultery and been unfaithful, God will still be steadfast. And the line is, for like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. So this image, when we talk about adultery, has many different levels of meaning. And so often we see this weaving through the story of the Israeli people and their relationship with God. They come back to God, they fall away. They come back to God, they fall away. And so this idea of adultery is more than just that surface image. To adulterate, if we use that word, is to lose the integrity of something. That bond with another person, or coming from a background of science, to put something in a pure substance to make it less than or diluted. Do not adulterate. How do we adulterate then? How are we unfaithful? How do we adulterate our consciousness or our integrity? When we approach this particular commandment from this level of consciousness about being unfaithful or adulterating the relationship, it really is about adulterating the truth in all the unthinking ways, our truth about God, our truth about our relationship with that power and presence, our relationship with one another. And we do it all the time. When we see people and we see less than the Christ in them. When we see less than the Christ in ourselves. Yeah. When we judge by appearances and assume the outer is a reflection of the inner of another person or event. When we don't understand who we truly are and the power that we possess, we're adulterating that truth. It's about what starts in our mind as attitudes and thoughts and motivations that we then take into action into the outer, because everything works from the inside out. It's when we affirm words of truth in prayer and then later feel, oh, I hope it works. Or we go back to worrying. We're adulterating that power of the truth. In order not to break that commandment of do not commit adultery, do not adulterate, we have to make a new commitment, a new commandment, so to speak. We have to make that commitment to the flow of good and the flow of abundance and the flow of life. And I know that is so hard, you know, because we are so inundated. Everywhere we turn, there are things that make us anxious or plan to make us anxious. So we'll go out and worry about something or buy something or get into the, oh, ain't that awfuls, you know. We have to really make a firm commitment that we're no longer going to pollute our atmosphere with negatives. And again, all we have to do is pick up our phones or watch the television or whatever, pick up a newspaper and see all the negativity that's out there. We have to really make the commitment to keep our thoughts and our consciousness at a high level of truth, to know the truth not only for ourselves, but for others. There's this wonderful epistle in Paul's epistle to the Philippians, and this was a very dear church to him. And this was a church he had started, and so he sends this epistle because he wants to give advice to them how to live successfully, how to live as a body of Christ, how to live a good life and a good spiritual life. And he says, "Do not be anxious about anything." When was the last time you were not anxious about anything? Human nature has not changed that much. "But in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." And here's the clue, he says. Here's how to do this. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable. When's the last time you saw a bunch of news about things that were noble and right and pure and admirable? Everything that is excellent or praiseworthy, to think about such things, to focus on those, not to be a Pollyanna and ignore what's going on in our world, but to really put our feet and our mind and our consciousness in the truth of not only who we are, but what we can be in this positive consciousness. This stuff, as I say, isn't easy. And it seems every day there's something new that we have to worry about. You know, it's like drink coffee, don't drink coffee. Drink wine, don't drink wine. Get this kind of toothbrush, otherwise you'll have a heart attack from the plaque on your teeth. You know, it's just whatever it is, there's always some new thing. You can't do anything without saying, oh, what did I just read about that? Or what did I just see in a commercial about that? That will send our blood pressure rising and our worry beads worrying. All of these commandments, whether it's what I've talked about today, whether it's what Reverend Mike has talked about, they all come back to that initial commandment, that initial truth. Don't take strange gods before me. There's one presence and one power in the universe and in our lives, God's good omnipotence. We are created in the image and likeness of that creative God. If we give power to anything other than that truth, that image, we're committing adultery. We're breaking a whole bunch of commandments. So, yes, keep the simple stuff, keep it on a simple level, but also go into some depth with these commandments so that we really understand what it is we're doing, how we're acting, what we're doing with our consciousness and manifesting in our world. Do not commit spiritual adultery. Do not commit spiritual unfaithfulness is what this commandment is talking about. Affirm words of truth. And you don't have to be obnoxious about it, just in your own head, affirm the truth of who you are to keep your balance. I know there are some of you out there who appreciate poetry, and I want to share some lines from a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay, who's somewhat of a contemporary. She was alive in the early part of this century. Just a few lines, and she says, "The world stands out on either side, no wider than the heart is wide. Above the world is stretched the sky, no higher than the soul is high. The heart can push the sea and land further away on either hand. The soul can split the sky in two and let the face of God shine through." Our hearts, our souls, our minds project and create our world. We have to be aware of that. Our hearts and souls and minds can let the face of God through. Our way shower Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is at hand." The kingdom of heaven is within us, within you. We have the power to project that heaven. We have the power to manifest that heaven. The big question is, will we do that?